Hare Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahavirayam Karavavahai Tejasvinavaditamastumavidvishavahai Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Okay. So then, six, the process given in Gita for obtaining the abode of Krishna. A. Simply by thinking of Krishna at the time of death, one can enter the spiritual kingdom. B. Our thinking, now absorbed in the material energy, must be transferred to the spiritual energy. Therefore, we have to practice remembrance of the Lord by chanting His names, which are non-different from Him, and molding our lives' activities in such a way that we can remember Him always. So, here's that one's going to In other words, at the time of death, that's the point of transference. So whatever you're thinking of, that's where one will go to. You think of the Lord, you go to the Lord. You think of something else, that's where you end up. Right? So, in here then it's mentioning, therefore, one has, the problem though is the mind is absorbed in the material energy. Right? The mind being absorbed in the material energy, then it's distracted from Krishna. So when the process of Krishna consciousness transferring the mind from absorption in material energy to absorption in spiritual energy. Right? This is what one is trying to do. Now, there's two main processes that are here. Well, there's one main process and one supporting process. So the main process is chanting the holy name, because there you're directly associating with Krishna. So directly associating with Krishna, that means then you're getting the greatest possible benefit from the process, right? Because you're absorbing yourself in Krishna. Krishna is the all-attractive. The mind becomes attracted to Krishna, right? So this is the always remember Krishna part. So by chanting the holy name, this is the most powerful, most direct, and most important process to get you to remember. So, all other things aside, this always has to take prominence. Right? So many other things are there, developments, different preaching, managements, organizations, but the holy name must stay prominent. If it doesn't stay prominent, then one has missed the point. Because you're trying to transfer your consciousness. Right? So you're doing service. Why are we doing service? Right? Just to do service, it's good, it's nice. You know, like that, you'll get the medical insurance that you get from being, you know, the temple president. You know, like that. Why are you doing it? Yes. Yes, yes. Mind, body, and words to be absorbed. So you're trying to be absorbed in Krishna. So we're servants of Krishna. So we do service for Krishna, right? But the whole point is to be able to remember Krishna. So that's the direct. Right? And then the other is our molding our lives' activities in such a way that we can remember Him always, right? So that means our life's activities, those are what we're forgetting Krishna about. Right? So this is the never forget Krishna. Right? Otherwise, why would we say always remember, never forget? Okay, it's a clever poetic way of saying something that at all times, place, circumstances, remember the Lord. So it is clever like that, but at the same time it does have meaning. Right, so always remember means those things that make you remember. Never forget means those things that make you forget, you have to get rid of those. So that's the molding of the life in such a way, molding the life's activities in such a way that we can remember Krishna. So our lifestyle, well, we are forgetting Krishna because of it. So we connect Krishna to that lifestyle, make Krishna part of that lifestyle. Then we don't forget Krishna. Then we never forget. Does that make sense? You know, family life, we forget Krishna. We're remembering the family. So you have to deal with the family in such a way that one remembers Krishna. So that's never forgetting. Does this make sense? Right? Always remember, that's a positive thing. You're chanting Hare Krishna. It's not that, oh, well, I like to talk all day, so therefore, you know, I chant like that. Okay, maybe that does do, but that's not the real point. The point is that we're chanting because we want to associate with Krishna. Right? So chanting Hare Krishna and then those who go with it, association of devotees, hearing Bhagavatam, worshipping the deities, living in the holy dham. Right? This will come out in your nectar devotion studies. These are the prominent, you know, the most essential of all the 64 items of devotional service. Right, so chanting is the essential point. So that is the main, and then those things that distract us, because that's then taken care of by the specifically by the Vedic system. Because the Vedic system addresses all those things, the lifestyle that you have that distracts you from Krishna, how to take that lifestyle and make it so you remember Krishna. Right? The Pancharatra deals just with your basic aspect of sadhana. That's all it deals with. It doesn't deal with varna, right? Because to do Pancharatric work, then that's brahminical. And in ashram, it doesn't deal with your brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyasa. It doesn't deal with that. It deals with that your sadhana, you know, within ashram. Because in ashram, you have sadhana, and then the position that you know that you are in. Does that make sense? The sadhana and the particular ashram, that's the detail of it. But sadhana is common. You understand? Because that's the actual elevating principle. The other is in support of. Does that make sense? So that's the idea. So it deals only with that. But the Varnashram will deal with the other part of that and your occupation and the family situation. Right? Pancharatra Bhagavat don't deal with that. Right? Bhagavat is directly how to remember the Lord. Pancharatra is the same thing but ritualized and in support of that chanting of the holy name. Then the Vedic is then how to not forget Krishna. Does that make sense? Like that. So these others, by always, if you all you do is sit and chant Hare Krishna, you're not doing anything that would make you forget. So it's a complete system, right? The Pancharatra then includes more. There's more activities that you do in deity worship. You know, so there's more aspects of the body, mind, and words to engage. So, but it's all engaged in the Lord in Vishnu's service. So it's also complete, right? Then the Vedic system then deals with all those things that are very distracting. But the purpose of them also is chanting the holy name. Right? Manu mentions that the most important sadhana, you could say, or duty of a Brahmin is chanting japa. Right? If he does that and nothing else, he's still a perfect Brahmin who's perfectly situated. Right? And then if he can do more, then he studies and teaches. Yes?
When we're trying to give guidance to someone with a japa, like a lead devotee, if they're having trouble chanting 16 rounds a day, is it okay to get them to focus on a little bit of service, say if they have a gopal duty, and they love, so they can just regulate whatever little service, and then with their japa, to get them to chant one mouth with attention as a fixed thing, but then tell them that will be like their goal, but then they should be chanting 16 mouths, so that it takes off the guilt trip that can happen with, in the beginning.
Yeah, it means if they're
at least in that focus, they'll actually, it will be focused and attentive, so then they'll be thinking of Krishna and not shopping and stuff.
Yes, I mean, you can as a start, but the goal should be 16.
Yeah.
You know, in other words, you're trying to chant nicely. So, you know, how much they can chant nicely and how much volume, then they should start with that. You know, and they shouldn't worry because it's a matter of, this is something that, you know, our goal is that, you know, 16 is just also as a basic minimum. It should be 24 hours a day you're chanting. You know, even whether you're using your beads or not, you're always absorbed in the holy name. You know, like the story of Arjuna, his hair was chanting, you know, so, you know, like that. So that wouldn't be so bad. So then, so that means he has good association when he washes his hair or something.
No bad hair days.
Huh? Yeah, no bad hair days. They're always chanting, you know. Yes, but don't emphasize the crutch so much as that we're trying to get there, but we start here. You know, just like you're doing exercise. So, you know, the first day, maybe one push-up is difficult, but that doesn't mean you stop. You start with that, but you're trying to get to whatever is your what amount that you're trying to get to. You know what I'm saying? You know, someone wants to jog around the block, but, you know, they get on their running shoes and their outfit and get out the door and just, you know, and get about 50 feet and then have to turn around and come back. But, you know, the next day they do a little bit more, a little bit more. The point is gradually introduce what's going to work, but never think that that gradual, that's good enough. You have to get that balance, because otherwise you have those, no, unless you chant 16 rounds, you're in Maya. And then there's others, no, just chant one round and that's okay, and... You know what I'm saying? You get that. It doesn't matter. We're not fanatic. But the point is it's a balance, is that we're trying to chant always, always remember Krishna, so how much they can do. So 16 is a minimum that's very dynamic. That 16 rounds combined with service is a dynamic amount that one will advance nicely, because our ideas in one lifetime go back to Godhead. You know, because you don't want to say, oh, well, I'll take a few lives, because you don't know what will happen. You know what I'm saying? You just have to look at the second generation, you know, what happens. Because what's second generation? Second generation is first generation who didn't make it. You understand? That's what they are. They're not casual kids. It means if the parents were devotees when they were conceived, they are devotees from before. But if the parents became, you know, devotees later and they were young, then there's, you know, something more special there. Then they're born, you know, like that. Does that make sense? So then that means they were less advanced or just, you know, like that. But if they're born into devotee families, they were, you know, what you're looking at in the community here who didn't make it. You know what I'm saying? And this is the point. Look at the community. What do? Or what are their problems? Look at the second generation. They have the same problems? Right. Why? Were they, oh, no, but they're the great... No, they're the same people. You know, all it is that you trade in an old body for a young body. But the soul and the consciousness and the karma are the same. Does that make sense? This is the mistake made by the devotees. Is they either think, oh, they're pure devotees, we don't have to do anything, or, you know, oh, it doesn't matter. No, they're devotees. They've come back to continue. And if you don't create an opportunity for them to continue, why did they need to be born in your family? Wouldn't it have been better to have been born to some nice family, you know, in upper New York, where they would get into Harvard, and they would do all these things, and they, you know, would do well on Wall Street? Why be born in your family? You know what I'm saying? Like that. So they're born in devotees' family because they're meant to do devotional service. And to get them to do something else, that's criminal, actually. You know, you want to do something else, adopt kids, you know. Just kids, you know, somebody from Vietnam, or something, you know, works for Jolie, you know, so like that, you know, and then do whatever you like with them, you know. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So just like, if I'd like to talk about the motor car to...
Yes. His point is to get them to the understanding Krishna consciousness. So in other words, it's not just sentiment. You put the philosophy with it so they're very clear. See, it's by understanding. It means you can create the sentiment where they feel comfortable. But that can always be distracted again. So along with that, you have to establish the philosophy. To understand is that it's not that, well, it's not good enough to do this. But no, we're trying to chant 24 hours. So the point is that the soul starts from wherever they are and tries to get themselves to that point. And at whatever speed and through whatever environment works for them. That's the point. You know, that's where Bhaktivinoda, of course, said, beg, borrow, or steal, but get a taste for the holy name. So it doesn't matter, as long as you get it. So, therefore, you're encouraging them by two things. One, pointing out a goal so they know what it is, and two, understanding that their identity, the position they're in, is not a problem. Because in the material sphere, how bad is the material, how bad is the reflection? You know what I'm saying? If you look at it, let's say I have a reflection, you know, I take my mirror out and I go over to a pile of garbage, right? You know, like that. And then, you know, after that, then I go over in a Vogue magazine or something like that. So the point is, but is there technically any difference between what you're dealing with? You can say, well, this is garbage and that's, you know, something aesthetic. But the point is that it's a reflection. It's not actually garbage or actually something nice. So the material existence is just a reflection of real existence. So it's because of us that we put, oh, right and wrong, you do this, that's good, that's that. Because we think the material energy actually is valuable. You know, so this devotee did this and that devotee did that. And so, you know, like that, that's so bad. That's, you know, that's terrible. This has to be dealt with like this or that. But what's the reason it has to be dealt with? You know, as we were discussing on the what do you call it? The third point in the subject. It's consciousness. So in other words, if you point out to someone how bad this is and wrong it is for what, why is it bad? Yes, the point is, the guy's dumped his wife, ran off with somebody else like this. What's actually wrong with it? You know? Because then you... Huh? Go ahead. Lack of response. So if you can't do that, then there's lack of responsibility, lack of commitment, lack of duty, lack of focus. One is simply what's good for yourself. So how is that going to be useful in practicing Krishna consciousness? You understand? That's the problem. Not that the guy ran off with this one and dumped this. Because if you're looking at if it's real, then you have to say is that, you know, these are real situations and life things. But the point is it's the bodies and the minds that are interacting. It's not the soul. The soul's attached to that, therefore they're in their environments. And if you look at it, it's like we were saying, it's a reflection. So why is one reflection better than another or less? It's only because you think the reflection's real, therefore you give it a real meaning that it has substance. It actually is there. There is a real reflection. So we don't want to get distracted by that Mayavad concept. But substance is only valuable if it's connected to Krishna. It's a value. If it's not, so therefore devotees jumping up and down about the bad morality of some member of the community, but they're not connecting to Krishna, is just as much illusion as the person who's committed that particular wrongdoing. It's no different, but one feels, oh, I'm better, I'm pious. But so what? Deers are pious. They're nice. They're vegetarians. They're very gentle. You know what I'm saying? So what? They're a deer. They're an animal. Does that make sense?
So we encourage consciousness and then quickly get it to the point.
Yes. So that's, yes. That's the point, is that consciousness is what's developed. So one has to find that balance between giving that, because they're a person, giving that in encouragement and that everything, but also at the same time showing that they have a proper identity and proper goal and proper method. That will then be useful, because you're going beyond what's there. It's including what's there, but the emphasis is what's beyond. We emphasize too much what's there and how to deal with it. You know, oh, they did this and that, and oh, they used to smoke dope before. And so what? You know, like that. What are they doing now? Right? It means if they're smoking dope, that's a problem. So it's a problem. Their consciousness, they're attached. So therefore, you want to correct the situation. But it's for the purpose of correcting the consciousness. Otherwise, whether it's this mundane activity or that mundane activity, it doesn't matter. That's what Prabhupada says, wet stool, dry stool. It's not different. But, you know, the wet stool is kind of ooky and the dry stool is kind of nice. You can pick it up, you know, put it in your pocket, you know, stuff like that. You know, but it's still stool. You know what I'm saying? It's still stool. So that's the difficulty, is that the consciousness actually gets distracted. And because, you know, God is good, so good activities are automatically connected with God. But that logic is fallacious, right? Because the good activity, how have we defined that it's good? Who's defined that it's good? If God's defined it's good, and you're doing it because God said it's good, then it is connected to God. Right? But if you're doing it good because that's the social environment you grew up in, then that's not good. It's not actually good. It's good in your society, but you can't say that that's connected with God. Devotees make this mistake all the time. You know, that's why we're going to analyze at this level, so one can actually see what's substance and what's not. Right? Does that make sense? Otherwise, devotees are living a lifestyle. Basically, they generated this generic kind of international lifestyle, but are they satisfied in it? That's the problem. They're not getting that social and emotional satisfaction they're looking for, because it's based on a lie. It's based on a falsity, right? Because Krishna conscious is the ultimate piety, therefore pious is good, and so therefore whatever I consider pious is God conscious. You know what I'm saying? You know, somebody in the community is not dealing right with their family. So other devotees will take it as they'll champion the cause that, to do something about this, And they'll actually think they're doing something solid for Krishna consciousness, but are they really? Maybe they're doing something good for the community, but what is their concept of community? And is actually what they're saying about good, is it really good? And if it is good, what aspect is good? Why is it good? But these things can't be explained because it's all sentiment. You understand? So the point is something that's wrong, there is going to be something wrong there. But there's also, there's principles on there, maybe other aspects, but how to actually correct it. Unless you see principles, you won't know what to do. Right? You know, the subject is burning. There's a principle of what you do with it when it's burning. It doesn't matter if it's cauliflower, potato, or this or that. You understand? It's the same thing. You're going to get your spoon and stir it until there's nothing sticking on the bottom of the pan. But that's because you understand the principle of what burning is. So, but if you focus just on the potato or the cauliflower, you won't be able to do anything about it. So that's the problem. They just replace one problem with another problem. You know, it's like Prabhupada says, you have a boil on your right knee and you get it, by blessing transferred to your left knee. You know, so the right knee doesn't hurt anymore. So you've solved the problem, yes. But now the left one hurts. Right? So someone does something wrong in the community, they toss them out. Now, okay, you've solved that problem, but now you have a bigger problem. Everyone in the community feels insecure. They think at any time I could be thrown out. So that means no one's going to commit to just giving their life and totally doing full-time service, because at any moment they could get thrown out. Right? So that would mean then you don't have anybody doing voluntary work. Right? And look at this community. How many people actually do some service here? I mean, do something with the temple. Right? You understand? Two or three ladies, do something in the, with Tulsi, a couple, in the DD room there. couple others do this and that. A lot of people just do their, whatever they can do on their own. And a lot of people, they're just living here. Right? It's a nice place. They're living in the Dom, but yes, so are the dogs, you know, so are the trees. You know what I'm saying? And that is okay if they're just there, but at the same time they're getting involved in the political things and this and social things and gossip and all that. So what benefits that? You get 1,000 times the benefit of the gossip. The taste was 1,000 times more. Such fulfilling gossip. Yeah, you understand? So the point is not that one feels disheartened. But the point is then one actually looks at what one's dealing with. Because devotees, a lot of times, say, you know, mold the lifestyle, mold the act. Oh, I'm Krishna conscious. I do everything about Krishna. But do they? That's the real thing, you know, like that. They're worried about the house or this or that, the kids or so many things. But they don't necessarily connect that to Krishna. You understand? So this is that it doesn't matter. Don't worry how good or bad your life is. Worry about, is it connected to Krishna? You know what I'm saying? That's the point. So it's not good. But many, I've noticed, they don't want to deal with this. And so their life, everything's perfect. And if you point out something's wrong, you're their enemy. Because in their mind, my life is perfect. It's all connected to Krishna and everything. They don't want to hear how to improve it. So of course, according to Gita, you don't tell them. Right? Ignorant people, you don't tell. Because ignorance generates anger and envy. So that's all you generate. So it's not worthwhile. Like that, I've seen that. Does that make sense? So the idea is that starting to create community, people have to know who they are, how much committed they are, what aspects of their life are connected to the direct, and how much of their life is not. And what's not, that's where the indirect, molding your lifestyle. Right? Devotees are at the morning program, some come to something in the evening, most don't. Like that. So after the morning program, through the rest of the day, how are they molding their life? That's the thing. That's then what is being given here. That's what Gita can show. So that everything is about Krishna. So at the time of death, you're going to think of Krishna. Because in everything you do, no matter what it is, it's connected to Krishna. You know, your relationships, the social things, your economics, your sense of justice, you know, your sense gratification, your understanding of getting out of the material world, all that's connected to Krishna. Because molding your lifestyle means dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. That's what you have to connect, because those are the mundane qualities. People are focusing on that. You know, they want some social interaction. They want economics. They want it to be just. They have a sense of ethics. They need some sense gratification, though they won't admit it, you know, like that at all. And they're interested in getting out of the material world, which is liberation. Have I mentioned anything that devotees don't talk about? No. So that's dharma, artha, kama, moksha. Those are material considerations. Now, if those have been connected to Krishna, then your life is molded in connection to Krishna. And the direct is what's beyond dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. That's bhakti. So that's the chanting of the holy name, worshipping the deities, like this. Right? Living in the Dham, all those aspects. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
But it seems that
yes. I mean, not so many, but we don't worry about everybody, right? You worry about, means you can start, the thing is when it comes to social elements, means as in spiritual, the only element that you have actual control over is yourself. So if you can correct, or let's say, not correct, let's say, correct by the way of connecting to Krishna. If one can make progressive one's own lifestyle and one's own contemplation and absorption, then you can have an effect on others. You know, as Lilamrita Prabhupada is saying, he's chanting, he was alone, and then people came or attracted. Then those persons being attracted, they're able to make others. Like Lord Chaitanya went to south, he was alone, others, they became attracted. Then they're chanting, they go back to their own villages and make their villages chant. Right? So when you're dealing on such a big level, as we said, Krishna consciousness is the only common platform. Does that make sense? Socially, there, if you look at it, what do you call it? Demographics? Is that what you call it? The demographics of the community here would be very broad. So the point is that within each of these, what would be an individual demographic? Then if in that group they're Krishna conscious and relating to each other and getting what they require socially, then it works. Right? It's not that you have to have 2,000, all 2,000 devotees in Mayapur you have to be friends with. You have to be pleasant with anybody you meet. That's etiquette. But you actually are close with those within your nature. So it doesn't matter. Right? But the point is that has to be understood how to do that. That's what's lacking. So generally what they try to do is think to pull everyone together. Okay, we'll have a lawn party, and everybody will bring, enough prasad for three people. And, enough people bring together, then in theory you have enough for everybody. I still don't know how it works, but, everybody seems to be happy. But that's okay, nice. But that's not the dynamic thing, because how often does it happen? Generally it's every, 3, 5, 6 years, there's a lawn party, out there in the park, and everybody. And I guarantee not everybody comes like that. So it sounds great, but it's not actually the thing. The point is the individual being Krishna conscious, knowing how to interact with other devotees, then that happening, then it will develop. Because if you think about it, everybody only has a handful of friends. Of the handful, only a few are very close. And of those that you kind of on a bigger scale, interact with, there might be two handfuls, two hands and a foot or something. You know what I'm saying? It's not that big. So even the most gregarious person, maybe kind of knows and interacts with, between 10 and 20 people. You know what I'm saying? So the problem is not how everyone can be brought together by the direct process. You know what I'm saying? Chanting, temple programs, abhisheks, Bhagavatam classes, these things, that can bring everyone together. Right? But on the social level, then it's a matter of molding your life. So you mold your life, and others who appreciate that, they'll associate. Because Rupa Goswami mentions, swajati means that you associate with like-minded persons. Right? And you try to find those who are more advanced. So, like-minded, more advanced persons. Right? Does that make sense? Is that going to work? It's just like this. Is it a problem that a small group of people are close to each other and have interaction and they don't worry about everyone else? No. This is how Israel has survived, right? You have 5 million people that basically like each other, and 100 million people that don't like you, right? So it doesn't matter what the 100 million think, it's what the 5 million think. You understand? So that's the point, is you can work within your thing. And then within 100 million, they have also their groups, right? So the thing, what brings them together is religion. Right? These are Arabs, these are Jews. That brings them together. Otherwise, it's like, who likes the Jordanians? And no one likes the Palestinians. But if the Jews are bothering them, hey, that's not going to happen. But if the Jews weren't bothering the Palestinians, they'd be in the same situation they're in now. Because no Arab likes the Palestinians. Right? It's just the way it is. So Palestine is actually Jordan. Right? But they're trying to say, no, Palestine's Israel. The Jordanians would say, no, it's Israel. But it's actually Jordan. Right? It's the same principle. So the point is that if like-minded persons you're close with, then it doesn't matter. You'll get that social interaction you're looking for. And then there's always Krishna conscious means it's meant for everybody, so everybody can take part. You'll have your bigger scale things, and you're going to have your smaller scale. You know what I'm saying? It's not all going to happen in one way. There's varieties of ways it happens. Does that make sense? So what doesn't work?
Regarding the community, it means that the small groups are working and the larger scale doesn't?
No, the larger scale is people come to the, you know, Abhishekhs and things like that, so everyone's coming together. I would say it works more on that level than it does on the small scale.
And also the security, then people can be, you know, if something goes wrong, then you're out.
Yes, but that's why I'm saying is unless Krishna conscious philosophy is the basic foundation of community. But it's not. Yeah. So, but there it's just a matter of what can you do other than you preach and follow yourself. Okay.
Isn't that a little like the sparrow
that's
trying to grab the ocean?
Yeah, but then Garuda helped, no?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just you do what you can. Because the point is Krishna is always going to take care of you. No matter what happens, he takes care of everybody. Does that make sense? So one is secure knowing that Krishna will take care. You know, so how he takes care, what arrangements he makes, then, you know, that's there. But ultimately, nothing in the material world is secure. Right? Why? Because it's temporary. That's there. So even if everything's going perfect, it's still temporary. But besides that, it's always a problem because of people's mundane consciousness. So the problem is not the Krishna consciousness. The problem is the mundane consciousness. Right. And then within the Krishna consciousness that they can cooperate. Because in the spiritual world, you also have different groups, different parties. They don't necessarily get along socially. But for Krishna, they get along. Does that make sense? You know, they have different, you know, Mother Jashoda is up to her, Krishna stays in the house all day. Right? So the cowherd girls aren't going to like that, the cowherd boys aren't going to like that. You know, but, you know, so it's worked out that he gets time to go out in the fields, you know, and then he can be with the cowherd boys and cowherd girls. Does that make sense? So all these different rasas, the rasas themselves aren't compatible between themselves. Does that make sense? But, you know, they get along because it's about Krishna, because they're ultimately trying to please Krishna. So because Krishna wants to go out into the fields, then it works. So, because it's not about Mother Jashoda, it's about Krishna. Therefore, Mother Jashoda agrees to it, but she's worried about, you know, his safety and all these different things. So, the other cowherd boy is assured that, you know, he'll be taken care of nicely. So, they all take out their weapons and everything along with them. And so, then Mother Jashoda, okay. Does that make sense? So, that cooperation is there. See, I'm making these points, I mean, it's not meant to, but maybe it does because it gets overemphasized, trying to create insecurity or create a feeling that things aren't ideal, trying to create an environment of contemplation that one is actually able to contemplate about oneself. Right, because that from that start is how everything will work. Does that make sense? No, so that's what we're trying to do. So sometimes to make the point, we may overemphasize. Okay. Yes. Anything else on this? No. Okay. See, the Bhagavad Gita teaches how to absorb the mind and intelligence and thoughts of the Lord. If the intelligence and the mind are always engaged in thoughts of the Supreme Lord, then naturally the senses are also engaged in the service. This practice is the process of devotional service. It means, so, the intelligence and the mind, if they're thinking of the Lord, they're the controllers of the senses. Right? Prajumna is the Lord, is Lord of intelligence, he's the Lord of the senses, because it is only through intelligence that senses can be applied. Right? So one's contemplating that, Krishna, one will be contemplating how to apply the senses connected to Krishna. It means the technique of it. The mind is contemplating Krishna. The mind likes Krishna. The mind is attracted to Krishna. Then the mind wants to do things in connection to Krishna. So the, how you say? The senses will be engaged. Because the senses actually being engaged depends on the mind. The quality of their engagement is the intelligence. Didn't make sense. Means the intelligence is discrimination. Senses discriminate. So if you apply your intelligence, then the sense can be more focused, get more result, right? But then that result is up to the mind what it does with it. That makes sense? Yeah. Okay, so that's the point. If the mind and intelligence are absorbed in Krishna consciousness, the senses will naturally be absorbed. So we're trying to, the intelligence contemplates the philosophy, the mind then sees that and engages, you know, in different activities, you know, with devotees and that, and develops that appreciation. Then we see is that the senses will come automatically. So then that's the practice, that's the process of devotional service. When the mind and intelligence are absorbed, the subtle body, the gross body will follow that. This is body, mind, and words. Right? The mind and the words, so intelligence and mind, if they're absorbed in Krishna, the body will follow. Right? So, of course, somebody who's very new, they don't know how to think about Krishna, their intelligence is developed like that, so you engage the body. Right? They wash pots, you know, for 6 months or something. So that then gets them purified, and in that time, they start to hear and everything about Krishna. So practical service is going on, purification is there, and then their knowledge about Krishna is increasing. So then, at some point, then it all starts to work. So then the body, mind, and intelligence are all can be engaged. Right? So that's the combination, that's the process. And then one must learn this process by rendering service to and inquiring submissively from the self-realized soul. So the process can't be made up. So Prabhupada has given us this process. Right? So then studying what he has given, right, from the devotees, from the community of devotees. That is then what we are trying to do. So submissive means what Prabhupada says is right. We don't understand it, we can inquire. That's not being unsubmissive. Unsubmissive means is that you don't understand it, you don't want to understand it because you think it should be changed. Submissive means it doesn't make sense, explain it. Right? Arjuna, right in the beginning of the third chapter, is saying, it appears that what you're saying is contradictory. So he's telling Krishna, you're talking about doing your duties, fighting on the battlefield, but at the same time he's talking about the soul and spiritual and the higher principles. So he was on the battlefield to kill his relatives because they've been annoying him for the last, you know, whatever it is, 100 years or something, you know. So he wants to, you know, correct the situation. So he can't put the two together. So then Krishna shows karma yoga. Your varnashram activities and the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, they work together. Right? Your activity is based on that you are the soul, but you're doing it for God. That makes it karma yoga. Does this make sense? So it's not a problem that one sees something one can't understand. Submissive means you're willing to be informed. Right? Unsubmissive means you don't want to know about it. So you don't actually want to hear, you'd rather argue. So does that make sense? So that's why service is important. Without devotional service, one can't actually inquire submissively. With devotional service, one is inspired to do service, and because of doing service, then one is able to inquire submissively. Then what one has heard submissively, then one applies that in service again, that will generate more interest and then more inquiry. Right? So it goes, it's a process. It goes in a circle. So if you're not rendering service, then you're not actually going to be inspired, therefore your questions are not going to be useful, right? Does that make sense? Much of the time, the most, you could say, most doubtful questions about Prabhupada's instructions, you'll notice, come from devotees that aren't known for doing any substantial service. So the problem is not that they have a question. The problem is that their question is not submissive. They're not actually wanting to know. They just think it's wrong and they want it changed. Does this make sense? Why? Because the adhikar, the qualification is not there because they're not rendering solid service. Because the point is that it's not an option to doubt whether Prabhupada's instructions are right or not. Right? You can have a doubt that I don't understand Prabhupada's instruction, I don't understand how to apply it, or why Prabhupada would say this, but I don't have a doubt that it's not right. Right? You know, scriptures can't be doubted. Right? But one may have a doubt about your understanding or application. That could be there. You can even have a misgiving about that. It just means it's deeper. There's attachment. But the point is you want to know. You want to be put on the proper understanding. That's the difference. So that comes by rendering service. Yes?
That service, it has to be rendered to the person that we're inquiring from?
Does it have to be rendered to the person we're inquiring from? Well, in this case, it's rendered to Prabhupada. I mean, service is rendered to Prabhupada. The instruction is coming from Prabhupada. So then in this way, you could say, yes. But it must be, how you say, in connection to the principles that the instructions are from. You know what I'm saying? Like, Prabhupada is saying you must surrender to the spiritual master. So one is we're surrendered to Prabhupada as the founder of Acharya, but at the same time it also means one's own specific spiritual master. So that principle is being followed. Detail may be different. Does that make sense? But the principle, because it's the principle that's important. The detail may adjust, but you actually have to know what the principle is to make any adjustment in the detail. Right? And for many things, the tradition establishes detail because it is the specific application of the principle that most universally works. Therefore, it's preferred. Right? Does that make sense? You know, it's just like if you're in a kirtan, you know you're chanting, you're absorbed. You know, chanting japa on your own with no one else, you might be absorbed, you might not be. Haridas Thakur was absorbed. So it worked. But for others, it may not be. So the kirtan is important. You understand? So that congregational chanting where everyone's chanting, everyone's absorbed, everyone's involved. Does that make sense?
You mentioned that tradition is the most universally applicable application of the philosophy.
Yes, it has the broadest range.
So what is the difference between the tradition and the custom?
Tradition and custom. Tradition is what the great personalities, how they applied in their life the teachings in the Veda. Right? So following the teachings of Shruti, these great personalities applied it in their own life. That's the Smriti. Right? custom will be, you know, local, how you do certain things like that. It means there may be a non-difference in the two words, but this would be how I would apply. So that's why you would see is there is that principle, let's say, of serving prasad, but there might be some slight difference in detail if you're in a Bengali house or in a Gujarati house. You know, one maybe give you more bowls or this or that, one might not. One might give you a banana plate, one might give you some other kind of plate. That's their custom. But the point is that you're taking care of the guest. You're seeing that they have all facilities. Right? Does that make sense? So in other words, you're understanding the principle that the tradition is establishing. If you understand the principle the Veda's making, and the detail of the tradition and how it applies the principle, then you take that and apply that what works for you.
You know, as long as the tradition is maintained, the differences in custom don't matter.
It doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter, just like that. So it's like, you know, somebody likes to wear all white cloth. Someone likes to wear cloth with nice borders on it, or these or that. Someone wears unsewn. Someone wears sewn cloth. These are, you know, personal feelings or customs in an area. So that doesn't matter. The point is that you dress in a cultured way. That's the principle. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
I saw that video by working with some local ratios and local customs of clown and monkeys, where it seemed a big harmony between the customs and the tradition.
There's a bit?
Harmony.
Of course, a custom has to be based on the tradition. Because, see, you're going to have there's four stages. There's the Veda itself, right? Then the Smriti is going to be the tradition of those great personalities, you know, the ancients, right? Then you're going to have how to apply that tradition in a context closer to your environment, like that, you know, like your acharyas and things like that. Then there's going to have what works for you. Like Ramanuja is giving something that's spanning hundreds of years. But his is based on the tradition established by those before. And theirs is established on the Veda. Then within that, you take how that applies to you in your life. Right? Because, you know, let's say, for example, in the puja, you know, some get more into the ritual, some more into prayer, some more into the manasa puja. Like that, some have one deity, some have many deities. So, all these are taught by Ramanuja, right? And that's based on the Pancharatra that's given by Narada, and that which is based on the Veda, right? So, according to you, you have a very, let's say, strong moon, so you like, you know, meditation and stuff. So you'll do a bigger manasa puja. That someone else who mind isn't so developed, but you know they like dressing the deity, so they'll do that more. Someone else has more mantras. Someone else, you know, will offer more prayers than that. Someone else will do a more elaborate, you know, all day they'll do puja. Someone will just do it in the morning, and you know what I'm saying? So that's applying it in your life, but that's based on what the acharya said, and that's based on what is there in the scriptures. Is that what's based? You know what I'm saying? So, we have, that's what's there, and the Bhagavatam is giving all means that's Smriti, and it's showing the tradition of all those great personalities. Then we have the Gaudiya tradition. Right? So within that, how the Gaudiyas apply that tradition of those great personalities in the Bhagavatam. Right? And then Prabhupada will give that to us. You know, that's specifically then the Gaudiya for us. Then we'll use that in our life. You find how it works, you know, how do you situate yourself, you know, in ashram, how do you situate yourself in varna, you know, how close or not close are you to the temple, how much are you involved in that kind of service or not, how much are you working with others, how much you're working on your own. Does that make sense? So that's where you have to make it fit. So that's the process, is that all these four stages must be there. The difficulty comes is, okay, this fits for me, and I might take something of Prabhupada, but might not, and then after that, it doesn't have any connection, really. So, tradition doesn't matter. Oh, we're Gaudiya. We don't care for that. Who said we don't care? You know, was Lord Chaitanya, what ashram was Lord Chaitanya? Sannyas. What varna was Lord Chaitanya? How many times a day did he eat? We here goes out to a lunch, right? What were considerations in going to lunch? Arbitrary? Or according to the traditions of a sannyasi or a Brahmin going to a Brahmin's house to eat? You understand? So say what you want, but the culture was still followed. But it's not the prominent thing. You have to do something, right? There has to be some regulation on eating. Why don't we have lunch at 2 in the morning? Right? I'm saying, during Ramadan, the Muslims do. Right? Because from sunrise to sunset, they fast. So as soon as the sun goes down, they eat. And before the sun comes up, they eat again. So that's how they apply, you know. But there's some standards based around fasting. But when they're not Ramadan, they don't eat in the early morning. Right? So there's some connection to some instruction. Some, you know, does that make sense? So the idea is that if you make it up, then the problem comes unless one is perfect, then one's what one is made up may be subject to the four defects of the conditioned soul. And if they are, do you want to base your going back to Godhead on that? Wouldn't it be better to base it on what Krishna and the Acharyas and Prabhupada have given us? Right? Because there's a connection. Devotees will try to say that Prabhupada changed things. Why? Because then they can say, I can change what Prabhupada gave. That's always the next point. Anybody who's talking about, Prabhupada changed things, he didn't do like before, he made his own. All you have to do is wait a few minutes and then they're going to say how they're going to change Prabhupada's instructions. Like that. Prabhupada didn't change anything. Prabhupada was exact. He was just so clever in doing it that he could take actual, real, old traditions and put them into a context that are very comfortable to, you know, contemporary man. You know, it's just like most people are comfortable with kirtan, lecture, kirtan, right? And that kind of like is a nice program, and then prasad. But that is really an ancient system. The Veda works like that. At every verse, it starts with Om and ends with Om. That's called Sampat. Right? And so you can't say a Vedic verse without Sampat. Right? Does that make sense? Classical verses is how you say Om and don't say one at the end. But Vedic, it has to be there. Right? If you're only saying one, then it ends with, you know, Om Shanti, Shanti. The point is to get the Om in there. Even some like I think the Madhvas, when they do Vedanta Sutra, because the Vedanta Sutra is so prominent for them, they'll put Om at the end of each letter. Om Atato Brahma Jigyasa, Om, Om. Oh man, I can't even remember it anymore. Yeah, Janmad Yasya Yata, Om, Om Tattu Samadvaya, Om, Om Ikshatarana Shabdam, Om. So they'll say it, and then the Om, and then the next Om. But like the, you know, others will take this om and put it together because that end one is that. But no, they want to make sure they've got two oms, you know. Each one's complete like that. While others will put om at the beginning, chant all the sutras, and then om at the end. You know, so you have these, basically these three options. So Prabhupada then did like this. So you only find this being practiced by really, really traditional people. But he's made it just as a common thing. Everybody, that's nice. You had to do something, you do, then at the end, okay, you know, so much philosophy, you have some kirtan, and then people really like it. Devotees really like it. No? So, Prabhupada didn't change anything. Only fools say that. People who only see details think Prabhupada changed something. But he didn't. The principles, he doesn't change. He even said, all the examples he gives are all in the Shastra. All his analogies, they're from the Shastra. So you're not going to get anyone more traditional than Prabhupada. But Prabhupada's able to take that and take it and transplant it into any environment because he sees the soul. He sees that tradition, you know, the principles of it, and then you find how to apply it. You know, he's not trying to say you have to say Om and then Hare Krishna and this kind of thing. There are people who do that. You know? So he doesn't have those problems because he understands the principle. Right? Om is the last manifestation, basically you could say, of the Hare Krishna mantra. Last expansion. You know, so therefore, if you're chanting Hare Krishna, why you don't need to chant Om? Right? So our kirtans, we don't start with Om like that. You know, so. Does that make sense?
Okay.
So just that this will be studied next year, but just so you're clear on what are the top main broad categories of the Gita. Okay. In the analysis of Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada has categorized the subject matters of Gita under the following categories. Part 1, man's eternal relation with Godhead. Part 2, section 1, man's duty towards Godhead. Section 2, nature of Godhead. And part 3, man's ultimate necessity and perfection of life. So this is in Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojana. So what is man's eternal relationship with Godhead? So that means, who's man, who's God, what's the material energy, what's the relationship? That'll all be established there. Part 2, the man's duty towards Godhead and the nature of Godhead. So what is our duty towards Krishna, and then what is Krishna's nature, so we know how to render that duty or towards him. Right? And then 3 is what's the ultimate necessity and perfection of life. Means your goal means what you require. You endeavor because you require it. Right? So that's why we can say goal, we can say attachment, we can say necessity. So here, by looking at ultimate necessity, is what's needed. Because otherwise you say, oh, that's my goal, but it may not be important. So a real goal is one that's necessary. Right? You know, you've heard this thing, you know, you don't always get what you want, but you get what you need. Right? Because need is actually the goal. What you want is the desire, it's not actually goal. People can't tell the difference. I want this, but that doesn't make it a goal. I need, that's a goal. Right? So there's a difference between the two. Because otherwise, if it's want, then that puts it in part one. That's sambandha. Desire is part of sambandha. But need, that's prayojana. Does that make sense? These three headings directly correspond to sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana. And this is coming from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu often mentioned understanding Vedic literature through sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana. For example, Bhagavan sambandha bhakti abhideya hoy, prema prayojana ved 18 vastu kai. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the central point of all relationships. Acting in devotional service to Him is one's real occupation. And the attainment of love of Godhead is the ultimate goal of life. These three subject matters are described in the Vedic literature. So Krishna as the and then it also mentions Madhya Lila 25:103-104, 25:31 and 20:143, all in the Madhya Lila. These all establish this sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana. So this is the basis of our whole course. You know, I wonder what it is. It's this. You understand these three, everything makes sense. Don't understand these three, you'll be good in certain aspects and this and that, but it won't come together and be as complete. You might overemphasize one area or another. This doesn't make sense. Right? Sambandha means the relationship of the living entity with God. Right? So means you have so many relationships, but the ultimate relationship is with the Supreme Lord. And here it's pointing out the central point of all relationships. It means, as we said before, the central point, you have your family, the central point is Krishna. Right? You have your job, the central point is Krishna. Even you get into details, we said, the child is actually, the childness is Krishna. So actually, that taste that you get from interacting with the child is coming because of Krishna. He's the central point. So it isn't a relationship that's there that Krishna is not the central point. Therefore, he is the ultimate relationship. Right? So that's Sambandha. Understanding that direct ultimate relationship and also how he's in everything and your relationship with everything that you have is also him. Right? So the direct and the indirect. Abhideya means the process of reviving that relationship. In other words, you have the relationship, we're reviving. Why use the term reviving? Because it's naturally there. So you're reviving what's already there. How to bring that out? How to make that happen? Right? Like that. So it's not a matter, Prabhupada says it's not an imposition. Right? It's natural. It's just drawing out. Right? So this is the ultimate, what was that? What's the French weirdo? You know, the education master. You know, bring out the inner, draw out the inner child. Right? You know, something like that. So you're drawing out the natural devotion. Like that. So he had something right, but wasn't quite focused enough, right? Yeah, like that. Missed the point. And prayojana means the mature result, the attainment of love of God, right? Because there's so many results, right? So all these activities, they bring one forward, but the ultimate result is love for Krishna, right? That's what we're trying to get to. Right? What was that? Lord Chaitanya presented his teachings in terms of these three principles. And all the Gaudiya Vaishnava Acharyas have presented their scriptural commentaries based on these precepts. If you study all the Acharyas' commentaries, they all use this. They don't use something else. Yes?
Can you explain how the different results we obtain in our daily life correspond to the ultimate result?
Means they should. You might not. But why are you chanting japa? Means you want to chant 16 rounds. So what's your goal at the beginning of the day? You have no rounds done. What's your goal? 16 rounds. But what's the goal of 16 rounds? Right? You know? You're hungry. What's your goal? Right? Take prasad. Okay, but what's the purpose of taking prasad? That you remember Krishna, that you'll develop love for Krishna. Does that make sense? So everything is connected like that. Yes.
Another question. How is it that we can hear from, let's say, most senior and respected and advanced devotees from our society that we should not put, it is not needed to put so much stress on understanding Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana?
You're talking about a particular region around Holland?
No, it's really.
Okay, because I know that area also says this. Because they don't understand what it is. That's all. It's that simple. If they understood what it is, all the problems that they deal with in this society, you could solve. Because as I pointed out, even your social issues come down to people don't actually understand Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojana. Because the Bhagavatam is expansion of what? The Chaturshloki. Chaturshloki defines what? Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojana. So to say you don't have to actually understand Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojana means you don't actually have to understand the Chaturshloki, means you don't really have to understand the essence and the purpose of Bhagavatam. It's just not understood what it is. They're taking it just another philosophical concept. But it's not another, it is the philosophical concept. Everything else connects with that. Because otherwise, if you don't focus on that, what are you going to focus on? What's their alternative? What do they say? We don't have to put so much emphasis there. What do they have to focus on?
Either they use it unconsciously or just take parts of it.
Yes, but my point is if you don't have to put much emphasis on it, what should you be putting emphasis on? So if you're not putting emphasis on anything, then that's kind of like nebbishism. You understand that? You don't understand nebbish?
It's usually on the name of putting accent on the process. You know, I just do it, you know.
Like but just do it. Okay, that's great. That's great if you're making shoes or you're from Eugene. Okay, but the problem is that just do what? How do you know what you're just doing is correct? And actually, if you go to most temples, are they doing anything? Yeah, should not. We don't want to overemphasize, because the point is understanding this, you have to apply it. So just being academically absorbed in Sambandhavide and Prayojana, that's also not very useful, because the point is until you apply it, you won't actually understand it, because you inquire and then you service. Pranipata Pariprashna and Seva. Right? The three go together. So, but the question comes is that did Prabhupada request or expect the devotees to study his books and get degrees? How many temples have these degrees running in their temple? We have 400 temples. That means we should have 400 centers that are issuing Bhakti Shastri and all that degrees. Yeah. And even that, many times, they're not even a temple. Right? You know, Radhadesh now is not technically a temple as such, it's an educational institution. You know, MIHE is not a temple, it's an educational institution. You know what I'm saying? It's part of the Mayapur project, so you could say therefore that Mayapur, but is it required that everybody get? Is it required that everybody studies? So you'll find some places they do have, but most places not. So that's something that Prabhupada was saying, that by 1975 he'd have Bhaktivedantas. He was talking about in the 60s, so he expected devotees to develop the courses and study, that they would have finished studying Bhagavatam by 75. And then they would become gurus. So Prabhupada was going to establish gurus before he left. But still to today, they're trying to figure out, do we need all this? But if we don't need this, why would we need something less like collecting money? You know what I'm saying? Management. These are all lower levels. So if you don't require the Brahminical standard, why would you require Kshatriya Vaishya Shudra standards? You know what I'm saying? Because Vedic culture is called Brahminical culture. It's not called Kshatriya Vaishya. No, it's Brahminical culture. You don't say, well, it's Kshatriya culture and that includes everything. No, Brahminical culture includes the others. But the others don't include Brahminical. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So the point is it has to be understood. You don't understand it, then what? You know? Then there's so many confusions about, you know, this and that and so many other things. Why? Because you're not understanding the Sambandhavidaya approach. That's understood, these problems go away. Does that make sense? Right. So it's molding our life activities. So there's sadhana and molding the life activities. Devotees know the sadhana and before when the sadhana was the life activities, then it's fine that's all there is. You don't need more. You got live in a temple and that's all you do, it's perfect. It's already done. But how many devotees don't live in the temple? Yeah, the majority. And so what is being done to mold our life's activities that we can, you know, remember Krishna always? So that's going to be in that process of understanding the Bhagavat, Pancharatrik, and Vedic processes. That means the culture. So what's lacking is culture. Philosophy's there, but there's culture, but there's speculation. And then in that speculation, you come up with ideas like this. We don't have to emphasize. It means, yeah, we don't just talk that only exclusively. Like before we had one preacher, all he talked about was the mode of goodness, establishing yourself in goodness. We don't have to emphasize that much, but yes, we do have to establish yourself in goodness. But it's not overemphasized. Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of that. If it's overemphasized where it's not practically applied, that's another thing. But if you practically apply it, that's not overemphasis.
You mentioned about the desire of Prabhupada for devotees to take proper study. It's also mentioned that in some instructions of Prabhupada that those who have such inclinations...
Yes, those who have such inclinations. But now, how many people are coming to the MIHE? It's like, what, 100 or something? Or, right? How many of them are being sent by temples? Right? So that means is, yes, so those who are inclined, they should be studying that. Those who aren't, it doesn't matter. Prabhupada had devotees who here who did the made the cloth. They used to make cloth here, you know, the top machine. And I think Jai Bhattaka Maharaj was worried that they weren't chanting the japa. And Prabhupada said, they're making cloth is their japa. Because they didn't want to chant. They weren't interested in chanting. But they were willing to render service to Krishna. So they're just doing service all day. And even if they didn't chant. Because they would come to the kirtans and sing nicely and take part in the programs. But they were not at all interested in japa. So Prabhupada said their service is their japa. So as an occupation, they're doing artistic work. Right? Does that make sense? So it works there. You know what I'm saying? But naturally, as they took up preaching or that, then they would start chanting and stuff like that. But if, as long as they're just identified as someone who does artistic work, if they do, nice. But if they don't do, it doesn't matter because they're doing things in support of those who are. That's the Shudra. Shudra assists those who are nicely situated. And they do that sincerely, they get benefit. If they can do it themselves, that's even better. But if they can't, it doesn't matter. Does that make sense? So Prabhupada even said second initiation. It's not, you know, everybody doesn't have to get second initiation. They're qualified, they get it. They're not qualified, they don't get it. You know? Does that make sense? So all these things are there, so you have to look at the picture. How does that work? And then apply it. But how do you define how it works unless you understand nature? Right? And nature is defined in the Vedic system. The same devotees who, we don't emphasize Sammanabhidaya and Prayoja, we don't emphasize, you know, Varnashram either. So my question, what do they emphasize? Otherwise, like I said, it's nebbishism. Nebbish is the Yiddish word for a nothing. A guy who does nothing. It's called a nebbish. You know, a nice guy who does nothing. Like that. That makes sense? So, what is it? You know, just like if you talk to other sampradayas or lines, spiritual lines, they're going to ask, what's your book? What's your sadhana? You know, what's your deity? Who's your acharya? What's your line? Can they answer those things? What is our book? Bhagavatam. All other books are in support of Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam is the book. You know what I'm saying? What is our sadhana? Yes, chanting the holy name. And it's specific as far as, you know, ritualistic content? Kirtan? No, it'll be Pancharatra. Right? Our lifestyle is technically regulated by Pancharatra. But it's based around, focused on the Bhagavad, chanting the holy name. Not on deity work, but on the holy name. But it is a Pancharatric lifestyle. You know what I'm saying? You know, can the devotees say what... I mean, ashram generally they can say, but a lot of people can't. But varna, can they say what varna they are? You know, it's not rocket science. You know? like that. But they don't want to say, because not they couldn't say, they wouldn't want to say, oh, but then you're discriminating. So if you discriminate between, you know, how you say, you know, when you go for prasad, what you're eating. You know, saying, you know, can I have more cheese? That's discrimination. Why are you discriminating? You know, what's wrong with the sauce? You know, why are you discriminating against the sauce, right? But most Westerners discriminate against the sauce, right? So this is against the Western principles of this broad-minded equality, right? You know what I'm saying? So it's not consistent. So where are you going to get these things unless it's known? So it's a matter, we don't emphasize it. Yes, we emphasize chanting the holy name. But in understanding that who we are in the process of chanting, we study according to. It's not that we emphasize, we study according to. And it works. It works. Even those, it means, one can say, no, well, we're just practical. But now, a seminar was given on Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana to professionals. And I don't mean, you know, they say they are. Everybody in the room, there were 70 people, everybody in the room was earning minimum $100,000 a year. And some were, they were working in karmi jobs. Most were devotees. But they're, you know, they're professionals that do that. And they felt that understanding of Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojana even made it their work better, let alone their devotional understanding. So how would one come to the conclusion that Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojana is not important?
Is it because people who take elevation now in this karma never train?
It's just lack of training in that. You see it, then it makes it have some meaning. Mataji? Or Mataji? One thing is, you teach. This one, you want to note down this question? Are you going to hand it out or reading it out or the essay? Okay. No problem. Okay, does that make sense? Okay. So what is it that we're, what do we have? Okay, now of this, then they do all the review questions?
The review questions we put them just to check out if they remember the.
Okay.
The essay questions they have to do with class.
Okay, and then there's four questions. Do they do all four?
They choose one.
But all these they should go through and for themselves. Okay. So here we have the for the first week, then the essay questions and that. Then there's review questions, so that going through this, then you know whether you've gotten, you know, all, in other words, all the information that's there. The review questions are the information, right? In other words, what has been in the introduction, what information has been studied, right? So you should go through there and be very confident you can do them nice. You don't have to write anything on them like that, the hand in. You want to write yourself. But you should go through each one and be very clear. And if you don't look back into it and find it, then it'll be very, you're sure you have the information. Then there's essay questions. There's four essay questions. That this is then is for understanding. Do you understand the principles that are being delivered in this information? Right? So much information. We have 12 questions on information. So within that, there are certain principles of Krishna consciousness that are being presented. Why the introduction is there? Right? So that's what the essay question is about. So that's what you want to write on. So there's four here. You can choose any one you want. Like that. And write. It should be no more than a page. No less than half a page, no more than one page. Right? So it means minimum, you know, what is it? I mean, 200 words, maximum 400, right?
Handwritten,
it could be typed, it could be, you know, you can get out your pen and do it in calligraphy, just make sure it's in, you know, some variety of English text that we can understand, you know, like that. You know, don't write it in ELF or something, you know, like that. Like that. This is not there. You could send it into the Star Wars site. They might give you a good rating on it, but I don't think you're not into elf, right?
No.
You? No. Okay, sorry. No elf. Like that. Yeah. But if it's handwritten, means it has to be readable. Right? It's not that we're going to grade you on handwriting or your English, but we're going to grade you on what we can read. You know, so we can only read your name, you know, nice name, yes, very devotional, like this and that, great, but, okay? And this should be handed in what, for next, by next weekend? Yeah, so hand it in next week, like that, because next Friday you get another one, like that. So the idea is the sooner you hand it in, are we doing like Sahotra Maharaj did? Okay, yeah. Means, yeah, he would take it on Monday, then he would read through it. If there was something that wasn't clear, he'd make some comment. You had a chance to rewrite it once to bring it out, and then after that it was done. This is here, these essay questions, it's not a matter, okay, well, I don't necessarily need to put into this. The main course is on, what do you call it? Continual assessment? Is that what it's called? Is that what you call it? So in other words, these essays, through all these things, then this is what the main grade is on. There'll be some ones in between and final ones, like that. Like the first six chapters have a connection, there'll be an essay for that. Second six, last six, and then for the full Gita, like that. But, so, it's not so much the final one on the full Gita, that will have a major, it will have more weight than, let's say, other ones, but it's all of these together that's going to be seen. Right? Yes? I would expect. Yeah, you should all get today, so that's what I'm saying, is before it was only one. So, you know, just get it in, hand it in during the week, you know, like that. The earlier, the better, like that. Because that's why I was saying short. The idea of short is this is not an exercise so you can explain Krishna consciousness in an elaborate way. This is to understand, do you understand the point? Because if you can't say it in 200 words, it means you don't understand it. You need 3 pages to explain it. Then it may get explained, but then we can find in that 3 pages, there's a half a page that actually says what you want to say. So our idea is just stick to the half page. Right? Yes? Anything else? Okay, so then you can... You had something? No. Okay. So then you can collect from them. So, yeah. So just try to keep it up. If you do it at this time and do it at this rate, then that means when we finish in, I'm not sure the date, you know, but it's not punching me?
8th of February.
So what day of the week is that? Yeah. So, I mean, it's up before that means we'll have to figure out what the days are. That'll be the end of the course. So if you do the reading, write the essays, then at the end of that, then you'll have the Bhakti Shastri degree. Right? You keep up. And if not, if you do it by correspondence, then it'll take a little longer. Okay? Okay. So, Monday we'll start with the first chapter. Srila Prabhupada ki
jai. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki
jai.
Jainatai Gaurav Premanami.